So we've done a lot of work. We've been on this journey of trying to get closer to God. We've been on this journey of trying to remove the things that block me from God. The 12th step is, you know, the way it's written on the wall is it's kind of broken into two different pieces of the puzzle. There's the piece of the puzzle where we're carrying this message to other alcoholics, and then there's the piece of the puzzle where we're trying to practice these principles in all our affairs. And I'm only going to talk about carrying the message personally in this session because I believe that if I'm living my life in step 10 and in step 11, that's really where the work is done for me of making sure that I'm practicing these principles in our affairs. So when I think about the 12th step, I think about working with other guys, trying to help other people find this connection to God. There's the line in the 12 and 12 where it talks about the gaunt prospector who strikes gold. And after all these years of mining, the only way he gets to keep it is if he gives away the entire load. I believe that if you've had an experience like I've had in Alcoholics Anonymous, if you've had this life-changing, life-enhancing spiritual experience that has happened for me, and I know it's happened for many of you, boy, it would be impossible to shut me up. It's impossible to not have me want to try and find new guys and find people to share this experience with. Some of the most beautiful moments in my life have been sitting with a guy who maybe we're doing a fifth step, and you see that actual physical change. It doesn't happen every time, but every now and again you'll be doing a fifth step with a guy and you'll see the lights come on, and it's almost like their skin tightens and their eyes brighten and their posture changes. And you get to see the spirit, whatever that spirit is, that energy of God, you get to see it enter into their life. It's absolutely unbelievable when you get to see that happen. And the big book talks, though, about I want to maintain long-term sobriety. What I'm looking for here, you know, we talk about one day at a time in Alcoholics Anonymous. We don't want to get carried away. I only want to tell you that today I'm only working on today's sobriety, and then tomorrow we'll take care of tomorrow's sobriety, because after all, this is purely a one-day-at-a-time adventure. And I agree with that. I mean, quite honestly, I never expected to drink booze on Saturday and still be drunk on Wednesday. All right? My drinking and my drugging career was a one-day-at-a-time adventure. And not a new concept, one day at a time, right? So Alcoholics Anonymous is a one day at a time adventure. But early on in the book, it talks about right before step 4, it says little permanent effect could be gained from step 3, from our spiritual experience, unless we do this work. Alcoholics Anonymous does promise me that as long as I have an everyday membership in Alcoholics Anonymous, that I will be able to maintain long-term sobriety. I bet my life on it. I have a life set up where I have a wife and a child and a business, and I have things and plans and relationships. If you look at my calendar, I'm supposed to be sober in 2021. I got places to be. I've got commitments I've already made, right? So unless you can guarantee me long-term permanent sobriety, there's really very little here for me. So if you're new and you've been told a lot about this one day at a time thing, I want to tell you that one day at a time you can stay sober for the rest of your life. For the rest of your life. But by doing 12-step work, what it tells us is practical experience shows us that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. What other activities? Well, what about going to meetings? Going to meetings might not be enough for allow you to stay sober permanently. You might stay sober today or tomorrow, but it may not guarantee you permanent sobriety. What about taking the steps? What about writing inventory? Well, this, that works, that helps. It's an important piece of the puzzle. Got to go to meetings, got to write inventory. But nothing works as well as 12-step work. What about praying? Well, boy, plenty of spiritual and religious people die of alcoholism every day. crying on the steps of the temple or the church. That if I'm going to have long-term happy sobriety, it is imperative that I work with new people. It is the thing that if I do will create for me the environment that will allow me to stay sober. Why is that? Why does it do that for me? Well, it does it for a number of reasons. I'll be going through my day, and I'm a car guy. I'm trying to sell cars. I'm trying to run a business. I've got employees. I've got customers. I've got all these things coming at me. And I tell you, they come at me all day long, and after a while, I don't care how many prayers I say, I'm just sick of them coming at me. I've just had enough of me and my life and my precious. And then the phone will ring, and it's little Johnny Newcomer, all right? Or it's the guy that's been sober for a while, and we'll have a moment, and I'll take a deep breath, and I'll answer the phone, and we'll talk about him and his life, and I get space. I get a moment where I'm not worried about my BS, how they think, how they're getting to me, what they feel about me, what might happen, my fears. I get to hit pause on my life, and I get to talk about them. And I always say the same thing at the end of a phone call. I always say, this has been really special for me. Thank you for calling me. I really am grateful. But for the last 3 to 5 minutes, I've had a break. We've been talking about you, not me. So I've gotten relief. You, however, have been talking about you. You have had no relief. Right? So now you need to call somebody and find out how they're doing, because you've stayed sick for the entire phone call. When you call me about your life and you tell me you're afraid, I will say to you things like, you know, you got nothing to be afraid of. If you're trying to help God's kids and you're trying to live by principles and you're doing the right thing, I don't know what God's going to make it look like for you. I don't know. I have no idea what God's going to do in your life, but I promise you, because I've seen it 1,000 times, I've seen it every time. I've always seen it work out when a guy doesn't drink one day at a time, stays sober, tries to help new people, lives by principles. It has never failed. I've always seen it work out. And I tell you, when I say that, half the time they go, oh, thank you so much for reminding me. And half the time you can hear them over the phone, like if rolling eyes made a noise, you'd hear the, right? You know that they're just thinking you're full of beans. But what else just happened is I just heard me say in my voice, don't worry, I've seen it 1,000 times. It always works out. As long as you're trying to help God's kids and you're living by principles. It's the craziest thing. I will be saying things to guys that I sponsor. And if they're guys I've had a long relationship with, often I'll say to them, thank you so much for asking that question. I really needed to hear the answer, right? Because it gives me an opportunity with real compassion to say the things that when I say to myself about my own life sound corny. You ever get that feeling when you're trying to talk yourself into spiritual principles that it just kind of sounds kind of rote and kind of corny? But when you're saying it to a guy or a gal that's your sponsor, that somehow it carries this depth and weight. And it is a magical space in my day. The other thing about working with new people that is so important to me is I don't notice God in my life so clearly. I loved when Don was talking about the guy with the butterfly or the white pigeon, right? He's looking for God and he notices God. But I'm a little more self-absorbed than that. I'm the guy that doesn't notice at all in my life. It's like standing in front of the mirror and trying to watch my hair grow, right? Because I'm present in the middle of it all the time. But when I'm working with new guys and I watch their lives change, and especially that guy that's 2 weeks, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days sober, how quickly God can just do things in a guy's life that, you know, you'll say to him, it's one of the favorite things that we say, they teach it at sponsorship school, well, we don't know, Johnny, what's going to happen in your life. We know that God's going to take care of this tragic problem, and we have no idea how, and we just have to sit back together and watch how God's going to take care of it. And you turn around and you say to your buddy, he's completely screwed. Yeah. But then it's something out of left field happens. And I get to see this evidence that God exists by working with this new guy. It's magical. I just had one experience with this guy. And this is one of my favorite guys. I've sponsored him for a long, long time. And I never forget when he very first got sober. He was living in the wrong part of town in this cheap little apartment because it's all he could afford. And I said to him, why don't you go move into a halfway house? There are halfway houses. I know it's not perfect, but geez, nobody's selling drugs in the driveway. It's a nicer house. This one even had a pool in the backyard. They supply food. There's a lot of AA going on. There's a lot of people coming in and out. Why don't you move into that house? And he's got tears in his eyes, and he said, I would, and I know what you're saying, and I really want to be sober. But in the last 12 years, he'd done 2 5-year sentences. Of the last 12 years, he'd spent 10 years locked up in prison. And he said, I can't do it. I can't go live with a bunch of men in a place that will make me feel and remind me of prison again. And I just can't do it. And he wanted to. You could tell that he wanted to. And he said, you know what? I said, why don't you do this? Give it 30 days. And if in 30 days, you know, you can't find a way out of this bad neighborhood, would you be willing to move into a halfway house? He said, well, I would be willing. A week and a half later, this guy gets a promotion at his job that allows him to be able to afford his own little apartment in a good part of town. And I'm thinking to myself, how does that happen? A week later, 2 weeks later, he's crying. He goes, you know, I told you I spent all that time locked up in jail, and I've been single that whole time, and I just feel like I'm unlovable, and I just feel like there's no way that I could ever be loved. A week later, this girl approaches him and says, you know, I've been watching you, and I think you're cute. And he was afraid. He would never have been able to say anything to this girl, and he liked her. And they started dating, and I'm watching this guy's life. I watch him get married. I watch him have a baby. I watch him buy a home. I watch this guy get a crappy part-time job at a company, and they promote him and promote him and promote him, and he's making great money. I watch his wife, unfortunately, take a drink, and I watch their marriage dissolve. And I'm watching God work in this guy's life, and I watch him with dignity, go through this divorce. I watch him treat her right and treat her with kindness and try and love her back to health. The marriage fails, and then he's all depressed and he's alone again. And he can't see a future for his life, and then this other woman comes in his life, and he just got married again. And I'm watching this guy's life, and I can't see God in my life. But when I look at his life, I just want to shake him. Like, dude, you're like the most God-loved guy I've ever seen. Right? Every time I turn around, you're getting another gift. This is insane. And he says to me, and we were laughing about it, he says to me, he goes, I don't see it. But I'm sponsoring this guy. You got to see how God's working in his life. And we laugh while he's telling me stories about this guy that he's sponsoring. That I get to see God work in your life is why it's so important that I'm involved in the sponsorship family. Life will take on new meaning to watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. My home group in Las Vegas is the Connect the Dots group of Alcoholics Anonymous. 3 or 4 of us got together and we formed that group. There was, at the very first Connect the Dots meeting, it was a Sunday morning meeting. There were 6 of us in the room. And I've watched our meeting grow and change and add new meetings. And we have a speaker meeting now. If you're ever in Las Vegas on a Monday night, we have 300 people every Monday come to a speaker meeting. There are greeters at the door. We have coffee, homemade cookies, because you're not allowed to buy cookies if you're a cookie person. You have to make them at home. Homemade cookies, because we're snobs. We're such snobs, we even serve grapes and cheese. Right. I'm very proud of my home group. It's a great group. It's a great meeting. When I look around that room, I've seen most of those guys get sober and get plugged into Alcoholics Anonymous. I have another home group because I'm alcoholic. I have to have at least 2 of everything. we have a meeting that takes place at my home on a Wednesday night. There's 30 or 40 guys and gals, and we read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And in that room, not by design, just by the way that it worked out, of the 35 people, 30 of them are people that either I sponsor or my wife sponsors, or my guy sponsor or her girl sponsor. In our home, Christmas time and Thanksgiving, the house is full of people in our downline. There's 30, 40 people that come to our home for those holidays. We have parties, and we have a Super Bowl party and a Halloween party. We have get-togethers all through the summer. We're doing a July 4th party coming up this year. And my home is always full of alcoholics. And I tell you why that's amazing. Because I was alone. 22 years ago this July, I didn't have a friend in the world. There wasn't a place for me to turn. There wasn't a connectedness. There wasn't a unity. I felt useless. I felt like garbage. I felt like I had no value in my life. The feeling that I had about myself was that I was so corrupt and so broken and done so much damage and had so little value in this world that the right thing for me to do would be to kill myself. But on top of everything, on top of all of the negative feelings, on top of the way that I think of me when I think of me, on top of everything, I'm a coward and I don't even have what it takes to do the right thing. I don't even have the ability to kill myself, on top of everything. That's who showed up here on July 17th of 1996. At my most depressed, and I'm like Don, I don't suffer from depression. Here's what I suffer from, situational depression, right? Which, what that means is when bad stuff happens, I'm sad about it, right? That's what most of us are. I love the new guy, just to digress for a second, the new guy that comes into AA and he tells his psychiatrist or his psychologist at the treatment center how he feels, and the psychiatrist says to him, oh my God, that sounds like depression, and he gives him pills. And he says to me, do you think I should take them? I said, well, why would you take them? He says, well, I'm depressed. Well, tell me about your life. Well, I just lost my job. My wife threw me out. I have no money, and I have two warrants out for my arrest. My children are not talking to me. I don't know where I'm going to live when I leave the treatment center. I have no future at all. I said, well, that sounds depressing. If you weren't depressed, I would recommend medication. But you're in a bad situation. You should be depressed. You're fine, right? So I have situational depression. But even at my worst, even at my lowest, and I want to be careful not to make this sound in any way arrogant, because I don't mean it that way. It would be impossible for me to feel like my life has no value. In the hands of God and in the hands of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have become a man that is an active, vital member of his community. There are scores of people that would say that the activities that I have done have helped them. I feel like my presence on this earth has not been a waste of time. And for a guy that showed up here so broken and so empty, that is the gift that you have given me that is the greatest gift of all. But it's a gift that's only been given to me through active sponsorship of other men. Through active sponsorship of other men. I want to read you a little something in closing that I always like to close these things with. I'm going to turn it over to Don to finish up. But let me tell you before I read this that I've had an amazing time these last couple of days. You guys have been very kind, very generous. You've forced yourself to laugh at the corny jokes. I'm grateful for that. You've looked interested when it wasn't that interesting, and I'm grateful for that. And it's been a real pleasure to be with you guys. This is a little poem that was written by Sam Shoemaker. I mentioned him earlier on, a great friend of early Alcoholics Anonymous, one of the guys that was not the founder, but an important guy in the Oxford groups. And it's called I Stand By the Door. It says, I stand by the door. I neither go far in nor stay far out. The door is the most important door in the world. It is the door through which men walk when they find God. There is no use in my going way inside and staying there when so many are still outside, and they, as much as I crave to know where the door is, and all that so many ever find is only the wall where the door ought to be. They creep along the wall like blind men with outstretched, groping hands, feeling for a door, knowing there must be a door, yet they never find it. So I stand by the door. The most tremendous thing in the world is for men to find the door to God. The most important thing that any man can do is to take hold of one of these blind, groping hands and put it on the latch that only clicks and opens to the man's own touch. Men die outside the door as starving beggars die on cold nights in cruel cities in the dead of winter. Die for want of what is within their grasp. They live on the other side of it, live because they have not found it. Nothing else matters compared to helping them find it and open it and walk in and find him. So I stand by the door. Go in, great saints, go all the way in. Go down into the cavernous cellars and way up into the spacious attics. It is a vast, roomy house, this house where God is. Go into the deepest of hidden casements of withdrawal, of silence, of sainthood. Some must inhabit those inner rooms and know the depths and heights of God and call outside to the rest of us how wonderful it is. Sometimes I take a deeper look in. Sometimes I venture a little further, but my place seems to be closer to the opening. So I stand by the door. There's another reason why I stand there. Some people get part of the way in and become afraid lest the God and the zeal of his house devour them. For God is so very great and asks all of us. Those people feel a cosmic claustrophobia. They want to get out. Let me out, they cry, and the people way inside terrify them more. Somebody must be by the door to tell them that they are spoiled. They've seen too much. One taste of God and nothing but God will do anymore. Somebody must be watching for the frightened who seek to sneak out just when they came in. Tell them how much better it is inside. The people too far in do not know how close these people are to leaving, preoccupied with the wonder of it all. So somebody must watch for those who have entered the door but would like to run away. So for them too, I stand by the door. I admire the people who go way in, but wish they would not forget how it was before they got in. Then they would be able to help the people that have not yet found the door, the people who want to run away from God. They go in too deeply and stay too long and forget the people outside the door. As for me, I shall take my old accustomed place, near enough to hear to God to hear him and know that he is there, but not so far from men as to not hear them, and remember they are there too. Where? Outside the door. Thousands of them, millions of them. But more important for me, one of them, two of them, 10 of them, whose hands I am intended to put on the latch. So I shall stand by the door and wait for those who seek it. I would rather be a doorkeeper. So I stand by the door. My job in Alcoholics Anonymous is a simple one, to stay close enough to God to where I can hear him and know that he is there, through spiritual principles to maintain my connection to him so I can feel the power and know that the power is real, not so I can keep the power, not so I can hold on to the power, but so I can find one or two or 10 with whom I can share that power. Thank you for sharing that power with me. Thank you for my life.
Yeah.